of Lake Effect Now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. St. Patrick's Day is typically celebrated through parades and pubs packed with people from the early morning and late into the evening. But celebrations will be very different this year. Ireland has canceled all St. Patrick's Day parades and closed the bars through the end of the month to curb the spread of COVID-19. And while it may seem odd today, this is actually how St. Patrick's Day was celebrated historically. It was once a temperance holiday where pubs and businesses would shut down so people could take the time to recognize and celebrate St. Patrick, the Apostle of Ireland. Tim McMahon is an associate professor of history at Marquette University and a social historian. He's also the president of the American Conference of Irish Studies. He joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in studio to share some aspects of Ireland's dynamic society.
So do you feel that Ireland isn't viewed in a very modern way, especially through the American perspective?
I think a lot of Americans have a view of Ireland as being a very quaint, old-fashioned place. And I mean, I think some of that has to do with the fact that most people who claim Irish-American background are in the second or third generation removed from having been on the island. And of course, a lot has changed on the island of Ireland over the last century, century and a half. I'd go so far as to say just the last quarter century has been a period of dramatic change. And I am constantly amazed every time I go back just how dynamic a society it is. You know, I first went there almost 30 years ago, and that was just for a vacation. And then I started getting serious about, working over there, living over there. And it is a truly dynamic international place, which unless you are there and see it, you probably can't appreciate.
Right. And Dublin has especially grown to be such an international city. You know,
yes.
As you mentioned, we think of the quaint view of a countryside and a white person living on an isolated farm. But Ireland itself today especially has grown to be something quite different, that the whole cultural identity of Ireland should probably shift a little bit in our minds.
I think so. I mean, one of the things to keep in mind is that Ireland historically was a part of the British Empire, and people from Ireland were heavily engaged in managing, conquering the British Empire. That's frankly something that people in Ireland themselves are just coming to really appreciate, by which I mean that the sort of the national story in Ireland has been one about trying to break free from the empire. And so the part that Irish men and women played in creating and managing that empire has kind of been shunted aside. But one of the impacts of that imperial engagement, both from the standpoint of having had people on the ground and also being anti-imperial, is that Ireland has become a symbol of anti-colonialism for many people in other parts of the world. A lot of them partly because they were familiar with Irish people, whether as, you know, missionaries or teachers or what have you, have fond feelings about Ireland. And there were opportunities for employment, especially in the late 90s and early 2000s during the so-called Celtic Tiger economy. And so you have a population that includes people, say, from Nigeria or from parts of South Asia. And some of those people with those backgrounds have been in Ireland for a long time. Most have been coming, I would say, probably in the last quarter century. The other thing about this, though, too, is that Ireland is very conscious of its place in the wider world, and that they themselves have suffered in the past. And so they are very conscious, their government and private organizations in the Republic especially are really conscious about contributing to the wider world. And so that dynamic is really important, too. And then throw in their EU membership.
Exactly. So you mentioned the Republic. So just to clarify for listeners, in case they're not familiar, the difference or the status and view of being in the Republic of Ireland versus Northern Ireland.
Okay. So if you go back a century and are looking at 1920, In 1920, the island of Ireland was still a single administrative unit that was part of the United Kingdom. But there had been an effort through parliamentary constitutional change by Irish nationalists to get a domestic government to cover domestic affairs but still be a part of the British Empire. That was known as the Home Rule Movement. And that had been going on since really the 1870s but picked up steam in the 1880s. On the eve of World War I, Home Rule became law, but it was suspended for the duration of World War I. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason why it was suspended was that there was a significant portion of the population of the island that was objecting to Home Rule and that actually threatened potentially to have a civil war in order to prevent Home Rule from happening. And that portion of the population was largely concentrated in the northern area of the island in a province that is known as Ulster. And so in 1920, in the wake of World War I, knowing that Home Rule was about to come into effect, the government in London passed a new Home Rule bill, which actually partitioned the island and created two Home Rule states: Northern Ireland, which is made up of six of the nine Ulster counties, with its capital in Belfast, and then Southern Ireland, which would be the other 26 counties on the island. Southern Ireland actually never came into existence because there was also a war of independence that was seeking a 32-county Irish Republic that was going on at the same time. When that war of independence went to a ceasefire in 1921, the rebels and the British state negotiated what's colloquially called the treaty, what was known as the Articles of Agreement. And those articles essentially reconfigured that 26-county state into a dominion of the British Empire known as the Irish Free State. And then over the next two decades, a new constitution was drawn up, which created an Irish Republic.
Ireland, I feel, has an interesting, complex history and identity because on one hand, it helped Great Britain conquer many lands, run, and then separation from Britain. Today, now there's Brexit. Complications. So where is Ireland in the face of Brexit and, or the Republic versus Northern? Because that's also.
Right. Well, I mean, boy, how long do we have?
Right. I know. It's a lot to cover.
So like the United Kingdom, the Republic of Ireland has been a member of the European Union since 1973, what was then known as the European Economic Community, and has subsequently become the EU. Unlike the United Kingdom, the Irish state, the Republic of Ireland, is very pro-Europe. Roughly 90% of the population is in favor of remaining within the EU. And so the Republic is very much a part of what is now a 27-country European Union. The UK has left, right, just in the last couple of months. However, two portions of the United Kingdom voted to remain in the EU, right? And so when we think about that 51.9% that voted to leave Europe, we need to remember that about 62% of people in Scotland voted to remain and just under 56% of people in Northern Ireland voted to remain. So there was really only one political party in Northern Ireland that had voted to leave, and that is the Democratic Unionist Party, which is the largest unionist party. But even there, their support is shifting. And so in terms of Northern Irish politics, they remain an outlier with regard to their views on leaving Europe. One of the reasons why Theresa May's government had difficulty negotiating a withdrawal agreement, one of the reasons why the Boris Johnson government is still uncertain about where they are with regard to Northern Ireland, is that the border between Northern Ireland and the Irish Republic is essentially an open border for trade and people, right? And that comes after decades of strife known as the Troubles in Northern Ireland. That open border is now a land border with the European Union. So how do you deal with that? How do you regulate trade? And with Theresa May's government, what they were trying to do in their withdrawal agreement was essentially to say that all of the UK would be treated the same in terms of its trade relations. The Johnson government changed the withdrawal agreement negotiation, so that for all intents and purposes, there is a customs border in the Irish Sea separating Northern Ireland from the rest of the UK. Now, Johnson and a lot of his cabinet members will actually deny that that's the case. But according to the language of the withdrawal agreement and the way that the European Union is interpreting it, that has to be the case, because otherwise you're going to have goods moving back and forth on the island of Ireland into the EU that haven't been checked. So it's an incredibly complex dynamic. And the Republic of Ireland, I think, played a significant role both in the negotiations for the withdrawal agreement, and they're going to continue to play a big role. They have to, not only because you have something like 13,000 truckloads of goods going across the border every day, but because a lot of basic essentials, food, pharmaceuticals, and so forth, travel between Ireland and the rest of the EU over the British bridge, if you will, right? So it might come from France over Britain into Ireland and Ireland over Britain into France, that kind of thing. So the dynamics of that are incredibly complex.
Very much so, and still, I imagine, will continue to play out, especially in these early stages of Brexit. So obviously, we can't cover all the things about Ireland's rich history. Perhaps we can have you back to explain more of that. But this is airing on St. Patrick's Day, and often here, for people who aren't of Irish American heritage, it's also just an excuse to take off work, go drink, wear green, consume green drinks, food, etc. But in Ireland, you know, wearing green is not the traditional way to celebrate St. Patrick's Day.
Right,
so
right.
Let's dive into the origins of the holiday, the true origins and the more civic celebration it is seen over there versus our excuse just to celebrate something
sure,
here.
Sure. Well, I mean, first of all, we need to, you know, dive back into the fact that St. Patrick is one of the patron saints of the island, right? So in terms of like every Christian sect on the island, they view St. Patrick as somebody who has created a rich legacy for them, which is really interesting because that means that as Irish people dispersed across the world, whether they were of Catholic background or Protestant background of any particular denomination, they have a soft spot for St. Patrick, right? So it was not unusual going back, let us say, into the 1700s, that in a place where you would have Irish settlers, they might have a function, a way of recognizing the Saint's Day. Oftentimes, that involved maybe going to church or having a meal, maybe having a large meal where you would toast the company and toast the saint. And sometimes that took on excess, right? The phrase drowning the shamrock was not unknown. On the other hand, we're not talking about mass drinking celebrations and the mass marketing of the celebration. And so, you know, for instance, some of the people that I've studied over the course of my career, members of Conradh na Gaeilge, or the Gaelic League, which was founded in the 1890s, at the turn of the 20th century, they wanted to create a civic holiday for people on the island of Ireland. And they chose St. Patrick's Day as a logical day for this. But the irony, especially from an American perspective of this, is that they actually were trying to create a temperance holiday. They wanted pubs to shut down. They wanted businesses to close, if not for the full day at you know midday, so that people could take time out and actually recognize the saint and recognize Irish tradition in a quieter way. That, of course, has changed quite dramatically, in part because tourism makes it possible for those of us who've grown up in a different civic environment where, frankly, St. Patrick's Day in the United States in particular was a way for immigrants and their children to assert not only an older identity but that they were American. That kind of tradition of the late 19th and early 20th century ultimately will find its way back to Ireland, especially thanks to the almighty greenback or euro, as the case may be. But, you know, even today, I mean, we're looking at a situation this year where a lot of those civic celebrations are going to be either canceled or toned down
right,
because of the current emergency.
So I once was in Ireland for St. Patrick's Day celebrating in Galway, which was such a great, unique experience in showing that civic holiday. It was parades celebrating the local towns groups, you know, local children's bands, things like that. It was very, very different from what we experience here. And then with the largest populations of counties celebrating St. Patrick's Day now having to get it canceled, what would you like people to keep in mind of what to truly celebrate?
I think one of the things that I would keep in mind is that people on the island of Ireland, both in the Republic and in Northern Ireland, have strong local traditions, particularly with regard to music, with regard to communal conversation, right? I mean, one of the things that I absolutely love when I go over there is to sit in a pub and listen to people talking, right? Which doesn't mean there isn't music playing, but it's not like every bar in the United States where the music is cranked up. There's genuine conversation that goes on. And if you think about the way that people entertain in their homes over in Ireland, there often is not only great conversation, but maybe everybody has their own party piece where they everyone's expected to stand and either do a poem or a song or some sort of declamation, right? Which can be really fun because, you know, people take these individual performances and make them their own, but it helps to celebrate the whole. You know, I think that kind of thing can actually be in many ways more authentic this year than maybe the, you know, green plastic bowler hat and paddy whackery that most Americans are used to.
All right. Well, Tim McMahon, we'll have to have you back to explore much more of Ireland, but thank you for your time today.
Thank you.
Tim McMahon is an associate professor of history at Marquette University and a social historian. He's also the president of the American Conference of Irish Studies. He joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in studio.